Accession number 24195, Reel 2.
Mr. Luff, Reel 2. We're talking about the aftermath of the bomb hitting the hut when you got, you know, second week you were at Collingwood. You were saying you were put on guard duty that night.
Yeah, I had 12 hours patrol on my own. And in the middle of the patrol, the petty officer who's in charge of the section come around and livened you up and calling out. But it was only half of what we started with, like, you know, all wreck. And if you've ever smelt a bomb afterwards, it wasn't very nice. But anyway, I kept it up and walked about, and time seemed to drag. Anyway, next morning, you can't go whaling. We was going whaling practice in the Solent. Carry on clearing up, helping out. So we lost a day's whaling again, and that was it. All cleared up. The builders were like bleeding ants, they got onto everything, and before we knew it, we was all whistling again.
Can I ask you what, I mean, that's obviously special, but what would a typical day be like? And then we'll pick up the sort of different types
it
of training.
Class.
What time would your day start?
I was up about 7, we fell in about 8, we got to our classes, our fast 8.
What about the food? I mean, breakfast.
Food was always good.
Tell us, what would you have for the different meals, and how, when you say it was good, what do you mean? Was it good quality, lots of it, or just, you know?
Quality was good and there was lots of it. You could eat and be filled up, as far as I was concerned, like, you know. And no problem with food. And you could always get a bit extra if you went round the galley, like, you know, if you wanted it that way.
And what sort of food was it? Was it the same sort of thing you used at home?
I used to have baked dinners and... I can remember kippers coming up in great big trays and all that, like, you know. Yeah, good food. Yeah, no, I couldn't argue about that.
You go to classes. Let's just look at what some of the classes were. Would you have drill again?
You'd have drill every day.
Tell me about drill. You'd done a bit of it with the ATC. Was it different, and how did you take to
it? Well, the only thing different in Navy, you saluted different, didn't you? You was like that instead of like that. And, let's see...
Did you understand the point of all that marching up and down drill? I mean,
well,
then, I mean, I know we probably do now.
We had to get fit. We used to run across the rigging. There was a 40-foot high rigging in gas mast. We put the gas mast on you and now run over that like a pyramid, all rigging, and run up that. I always remember being behind Rex Ingram, and halfway down the pipe of your mast was a small brass hook. And he caught in the rigging. And as he's going, he's stretching, and he can't get his mask off, and he can't breathe. And I went back for him and pulled his... and I've got a pay officer shouting his head off of me. And anyway, we got him off, took him up, and it was a pretty high for blokes who are not used to heights, like, you know.
Were you bothered by heights?
Never had been. To that extent. I don't say you wouldn't rather work on the ground, but I've got pictures of myself there, some of the jobs I've done. And
so that was one thing, master. What you'd have drill. What else would you... I mean, what about seamanship?
Seamanship was all... everything to do with seamanship, with the weights in the chains. On, they used to have a mock-up of the chains where you'd swing a lead weight, which tested the sea bottom. And that was 14 pounds, and you swung it, and for a kid of 17 trying to get a weight out like that, and it would be good, and you'd give it one twist, and over your head, and sometimes it'd come down, and it'd kill you, and you had that. Then you had all your ropes, different types of ropes, different types of tackles. You had to learn all that.
Did you actually do knots and splices?
Knots, splicing, oh yeah, splicing on ropes is easy, but when it comes to hawsers, to splice is a different kettle of fish. That took a lot of training. But we started off with ropes, manillas or whatever, and there's no problem with splicing. Matter of fact, my dad used to teach me splicing as a kid.
What about boxing the compass? Were they still teaching you that?
Oh, yeah, the compass, yeah.
Yes. What else? Seamanship.
Seamanship, let's see. Yes.
But what about the whalers then? Tell me about that. Learning to row, I presume that was.
Well, each man had an oar, and that's where man. So, but also had a sail. you could always rig a sail on a whaler, which we had a petty officer, Dickie Bird, who's a Scotchman, a real maritime Scotchman. He taught us how to sail in Belfast Lock and used to have some lovely...
That's a bit later. I mean, more with Collingwood.
Collingwood, no. It was all drill, training, do as you're told and double up whenever you see.
But I thought you had whaler, because you'd had your whaler training...
Oh, whaling exercise. Yeah, they'd take you for an exercise with whaling on the Solent somewhere near Whale Island, I think. And we used to do that.
And what would... Well, that was rowing, was it?
That was rowing, yeah. They'd take you out in the boat and do that. And a lot of blokes are sick, even in a boat, like, you know. Fortunately, I wasn't. The only time I felt squeezy was on the Queen Elizabeth for a couple of days.
We will come to that. So, anything else you might be doing during the day, seamanship or...
I can't.
I mean, you weren't there that long. You were only there a couple of months, June till August.
12 weeks, yeah, I think it was. And you know all the grounding, they give you a grounding. First thing was they cut all your hair off.
Did you mind?
No, not really. But at that time it was Boston's and that we was all heavy there at that time. But my mate Weezer, I'll never forget him. As I was going on leave, Weezer come in to do his... He joined aircraft carrier out in the States. He looked at my head, what are you doing? What do you have a haircut like that for? And he's got his lovely dark hair. What do you have a haircut like that for, Jim? I said, you'll have one. No, I won't. He said, I ain't having my haircut like that. I'll see him before I went the next morning. He was worse than me. But anyway, that was all part of...
Did you do any gunnery drill while you were at Collingwood? You know, learning guns?
There wasn't a lot of learning guns, but they give you the outline of it. Like, they had a couple of old guns in the drill hall, and they showed you what it was all about. And, I mean, I was trained on board as a gunner.
I'll come back to that, yeah. So anything else you did at Collingwood that you remember?
No, I can't. We used to go ashore into Fareham, and Fareham was a nice town.
Is Fareham the nearest town?
Nearest town, yeah. And we used to have a nice time at Fareham.
What would you do there?
We'd go in the nearest... was it the NAFI or YMCA, but the women used to run it, and if you wanted a good meal, I remember it now, and the sausage and whatever they give us, it was lovely. You couldn't find a better meal. And
I mean, you were underage, but would you go for a pint or...
Oh, you'd sneak away for a pint. And that was it. When that bomb dropped, there was another bomb the same night. It dropped by the gasworks. We went around and had a look at that. And other than that, there was all London boys from Barking, Romford, and...
How did you get on with the lads? Tell us about that.
Terrific.
Tell us about some of your friends. What you remember of?
Shiner Wright, that was his nickname. Big 6'2", 17-year-old boy. Very slow. And Jimmy James, he was a bookmaker's son from Romford. Outskirts of Romford. No, tell a lie, went a bookmaker. His father was a master builder. He used to take bets on the side. Master builder. And him, Rex Ingram, his father was a flight lieutenant. And he was a little bit more educated than us. Why he became a seaman, I don't know. He went to go to sea, that was it. But I always remember we had our teeth checked. And he looked at me, because Dad used to say, salt water and soap and your flannel, that'll do you. You don't want toothbrushes. There's six of us, see. So, anyway, Rex looked at me, he said, you'll have all your teeth out, Jimmy. He said, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, I went in, I had three fillings, and one of them fell out the other day from 1943. Yeah, and I had it done. He went in, he had the first four top from a man who kept his teeth looking good, but there was something wrong with him, his gun. They took the first four out, he went off choke, and that was him.
Any other pals or people you remember?
But Rex, Jimmy James, they was... Oh, Bob Collier. Bob Collier come from Bow. He was on the Bickerton, which was later torpedoed. And we used to be four or five of us together. And but we was friendly with everyone.
There was no bullying from the sound of it?
No.
No trouble at all?
Because we was all London-wise, street-wise boys who never put it about, but we could look after ourselves. Especially if you lost your temper.
What about the instructors? How did you get on with them? I mean,
Price was an old, we say old, at that time, 17, 40, looks old, doesn't it? And I dare say he was only about 40, 41. And I think there's a photo of him up there, old Pricey. And
what was he like? What, how did he treat you?
He was gnarled, if you know what I mean. He looked as he'd lived, and been to sea all his life. And I always remember him getting hold of us and shoving us in the showers and pushing us about. It's all about hands on. And he was good, had a sense of humour, lovely sort of old boy.
And did he know his stuff?
He knew, oh, he knew. Yes. I used to take the seamanship and talk about... so he was in the Great War, so he could have been about 45, anything like that, 50.
Was he the only one you had, or did you have different ones for different...
Different ones for different classes, yeah.
And what were the others like?
Other classes, oh, fair enough, blokes, but you didn't step out of line. There's no way you... Because they only needed a sharp look or... Outside, you would be doubling around the playground in 2 seconds. There's no messing about.
Was discipline quite harsh then, or not harsh, but strict?
It's strict. You knew how far to go. Simple.
Did you get into trouble yourself, ever?
Never. Never warned, such as being in the cinema overnight and being a bit rowdy, laughing, chaffing. Yeah, all that. They used to get in there, must have been about 2,000 boys in there. But we weren't even men, like, we was all kids, all laughing, messing about, and doing the best we could that way.
Now, you left in August, 43, and went to Victory, which is Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Is that... What happened there, then? Were you in the barracks?
No, I went to Victoria Barracks, Victory Barracks or whatever, and I was in Anson Block. But the whisper went round that... The overflow camp at Havant was a place to get to because it was amongst greenfields, which was Havant, outside Portsmouth. And there was doors, so many classes there for young lads. We were still in training. We was
You got to go to Havant. I mean, you were put there.
Yeah. I had me 7 days leave in between. I had 7 days leave. And had a navy issue uniform which bunched underneath your arm, and never fitted where it touched. It was terrible. And my brother was in the navy. When he saw me, he laughed. Anyway, first thing you do is try to get made a measure suit. But haven't you done a lot of marching? We was living in tents, bull tents, about six of us to a tent. And we done a lot of training with pikes. No rifles. I'd done rifle shooting at Collingwood, but we had pikes and was marching about with pikes, 10-foot pike on your shoulder, you know, and all that lark, making out there was an invasion. But we was all that. We also went. There was a local gentry pheasant shooting. I was a beater.
What do you remember of that?
Oh, going through the forest, and my mate put a pheasant down his trousers. And the petty officer frisked him when we got back. And why he put it down his trousers, I suppose he intended to cook it, but with no way other than an open stove he could have cooked it. It was just devilment, like, you know, you see a pheasant there, he picked it up and put it down his trousers.
What did you have to do as a beater? I mean, it's pretty obvious, but can you just tell us what you did?
We got in line, and the local gentry followed us, and we had sticks and staves, and we was beating, and the pheasants were flying up. But what you done is called cock. You didn't on a hen. You never made a move with a hen that never shot them. The cock was a pheasant. Anyway, I had a couple of days of that. It's all experience and laugh.
What were the training at Havant or Portsmouth?
All to do with seamanship. You used to have classes, and they'd talk about seamanship and different battles, what went on, and what site type of ship you go to and might do, and that was that. Anyway, my draft come through.
Now, so you were there from basically August till September, from the look of it?
Yeah, I suppose. Oh,
and then you went to Saker's the United States one,
United States, yeah.
So you left Victor, well, it's all under Victory Barracks, both of them. You left there in mid-September, 43. Yeah. What was the drafting procedure? What would happen when you got your draft?
Well, you was issued with a hammock and a kit bag. That was all your possessions. Oh, and a small case, small brown case. That was your gear, and you carried that everywhere. You joined the draft, your kit would be handled, and you put them in trucks and they would all go in front of you. You'd get there, you'd unload, and anyway, we went to Glasgow first, marched around Glasgow, had a meal. Next thing I know, we're going out. I've only heard of Greenock through different Scotsmen than that, and we went out to Greenock. Looked out across the bay, there was this great big liner, and we got in a drifter and we went out there. And when you're going alongside the Queen Elizabeth from down here, you're looking at a block of flats about 200 foot high, it seemed. Anyway, we got aboard her, and I was in 69B, isn't that funny, just like that, 69B, the cabin, B deck. And it was about 9 bunks, in threes. And we was in that, me, Jock Treffel, and a few others. Treffel stayed with me through right through the into the Gore. And we was on the QE.
Now, what was it? What were conditions like on the QE?
Like being in a hotel, except there was a lot of us. The food was fabulous. You hadn't seen it before. You was getting oranges, which you hadn't seen for months, and bananas, because I was travelling and getting all this fresh stuff. And we used to eat in the big eating hall, and our own people would be waiting on us. We'd take turns in waiting. And it was lovely. It was, I think it was only 5 days and we was across.
Now, you had a bit of trouble with seasickness, though.
I think it was the atmosphere, it was heavy, like, you know, you can call it seasick, I suppose, but that was the only time that I felt rough at sea, because it was a funny movement, the ship, and I suppose it did get to me. But I never sick, which would have been easier, but I couldn't.
You weren't actually sick, but no, you just felt a bit off.
Just felt rough for a day or so. But after that, I was never even had a hint of sickness. I'll tell you a funny story about sickness later on. But
So 5 days. Still be September when you got there.
September. We went up into New York, and as we passed the Statue of Liberty, and that, we docked alongside the Normandy, which was then called the Lafayette, I think. And the Normie had been sabotaged, and she was on the side, and she was as big as the QE. And we was in the next dock. You could see it all, and that was that. Anyway, we came off, took us back across the river to New Jersey. We went to a place called Asbury Park. And we went out there, and we done some more training. But
no, that was HMS Saker Barracks.
Yeah. Wasn't the Saker Boston?
Whatever. You thought that was Boston, yeah.
Boston was our main area, what we finished up in. We were still travelling, like, more or less. We went to New Jersey, and we stayed there a few days.
Was that in a hotel?
Hotel. It was Monterey, I think, the name of the hotel. Well, no, it's a name like that. And anyway, funny thing, I was scaffolding once, and me and my mate, he turned out he was in the same time as me. He was on this turnout. Anyway.
What sort of reception did the Americans give you?
Because lovely. We got 50% more pay. I think it was another dollar a day, whatever. We thought we was millionaires. Immediately we was on extra pay being over there. And I can always remember getting on my first underground, which used to be underground and up overground. I remember two old daisies, nice old woman, feeling my cloth, getting hold of my uniform and saying, "My God, how do you wear that next to your skin?" I said, "Well, you get used to anything." And they would think nothing of taking you home and feeding you and anything like that. Very hospitable.
Did the supply, I mean, some of it was supposed to have been a supply of free tickets to sporting events, shows and things. Did you mean that?
You could go around the Baddies Club on Boston Common. And that's when we arrived.
That's an actual Boston. Yeah. What about in New York?
Never got going in New York. All I see of New York was Central Station. I'll tell you something funny about that. We got the train from Asbury Park, or we come over into New York, got the train at Central Station, and then we travelled to Boston. And we arrived at Boston 2 o'clock something in the morning. But anyway...
Now that would be Fargo Barracks at Boston.
Was it Fargo Barracks?
That's what the barracks are called in Boston. The big.
It was in the dock area we went first, but later on we went to Charleston, which is down the river a bit, and we caught the train. I remember getting on the train and we had waiters feeding us, like, you know. And every time they put something down, they also put a bowl, tipping with, like, you know, and they shuffled this bowl around and we was pushing it back and this went on all the afternoon. we finally give in and give them 5 cents each or something, but they definitely wanted tipping, and we'd never brought up on tipping. But that was that. We got to Providence, I think, one place they stopped that. Anyway, from there, we finally got to Boston Navy Yard, down the dock area, and they started calling out kit bags and hammocks. You got all your names printed on them. Anyway, Jay Luff was called out. My number was PJX518751, and it wasn't the wrong number. But I walked out because it was Jay Luff, and my cousin walked the other side. I said, "John, what are you doing here?" He said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I've come over on a QE." I said, "So did I." He said, "Oh," he said, because he'd been in the Navy 2 years, he'd been in submarines. He said, "I was at a gunner's party on a QE." He said, "He manned one of the guns, like, you know." Anyway, being an old Matlow, we called him old Matlow. 2 years he was old Matlow as far as we were concerned. He knew all the ropes. Next thing I know, he's in the canteen. And he's feeding me up everything I could even think of. And, oh, my God, from shredded wheat to crispies of the morning, I had milk, I had ice cream. And anyway, he went his way and I went my way. I joined the Gore on the day before my birthday, 17th of October.
What were you doing before that then? Because there's about a month in between.
We'd done a march on Columbus Day, if I remember rightly, or one of the holidays, and we got round the Italian sector and they was calling us, all the limey bees are going. You wouldn't believe that, would you? The rest of New York and Boston was happy to know you and patting you on the shoulder, but the Italians didn't like us at all. but you know, in a good natured sort of way, and that was that. There was different things like that got up. We also worked and all, like cleaning the barracks and all that. Like, we wasn't allowed to hang about, but enjoyable. But on top of that, we bought all American naval working gear, what you wear now, denims and your denim shirt, because British Navy was overall. And that's what you wore. But coming away from there, it was so cheap, and they was paying us extra. We had about 3 pairs of jeans and shirts. We was well kitted out, and that was that.
Now, what were your first impressions of the ship when you saw HMS Gore?
Like a boy with a new toy, and we went from one end of the ship to the other. The welders were still working on it, I'll tell you something funny about that. I was detailed to work with a welder, Carrier Sprite. He said to me, "Jack," he said, "well, he's working in the bilge, in that kind of area." He said, "You'll see the sparks come off and they'll flare up." He said, "What I want you to do is squirt them out, like, all right." He's in the mask and leather gear. Anyway, we've done a few, and all of a sudden, bit of hot metal drops off and it flares up like anything. So I let him have a double barrel of this flare, of this spray. He got the lot. He was whacked from head to foot, and he called me everything. I said, well, it's either that or you can set yourself alight. And we went on like that. It's a good experience, like that.
Were you aware that the ship wasn't like most ships? Because they were unusual.
Oh, yeah.
For the Royal Navy,
anyway. We were in bunks, for a start. And there was no portholes. And it was very sparse. Like, you know, it was comfortable. It, when you think in this area we'd have a mess of 13 and another 6 foot. That would be 26 men in this width for one side of the ship. Forward. And the same over there. And you get used to anything, though. You had your comfortable bunk and three-tier bunks with your lockers underneath. And that was it. But no really guaranteed space. You fought for what you got.
But what did you reckon to the bunks?
The bunks mattress was very good. It was terrific, in fact. It meant that we never had to unroll your hammock. And that takes a lot of doing, you know, getting your hammock out and morning, evening. When I was on the wire, that was that sloop at the end of the war, you'd done that every morning, every night. You couldn't leave them hanging. You had to make them up every night and every morning.
And so you preferred bunks?
Oh, the bunks was terrific, yeah. All you had to do is got out, you know. Your locker was underneath. Oh, our Navy was streets behind that, as far as I was concerned.
They had some other American fittings as well. I mean, some of them had laundries as opposed to...
Oh, we had laundries, yeah. We'd go down the laundry and do all your dough in. Yeah.
Would you actually use it? Because some of them still use the bucket, though there was a laundry.
Well, this is what we used to do. I used to... The mates, we used to go have a shower, strip off, sit by your bucket, have a chat, and wash. You wouldn't do that particular, I suppose, but it used to be clean. And you had to be clean because you'd have a petty officer up your back. And away you went. But that was the usual thing. I'm talking about blankets and all that. We used to put them in a machine, like, you know. But all your T-shirts and that, you damn washed. Oh, yeah, no bother there.
Any other American fittings?
Well, the gun itself was American. Never had no guard on it. No, it was open.
Now that's a three-inch. What did you think of the three-inch gun? You hadn't had much experience of guns, but, I mean... What did you think of it?
I started training immediately, straight away, perhaps because I had a loud voice over the phone. And I was communications number. And I was trained up as sight setter communication number. And I could do it. I can even do it now.
Now, tell me...
Against crew, close up, clear the way, ball, clear firing mechanism, tested and found correct. Easy as that. And you never forget it.
You just say that again, because I talked across it. Say it again.
A-gun's crew closed up, cleared away, bore clear, firing mechanism tested and found correct. That was the first thing you said. That's when the captain of the gun went like that to me. Well, everything was ready. Then I got the orders from the bridge with SAP, semi-armor piercing, load, load, load. So then he'd load it. And then they'd give me the range. I had to repeat. I'd done more work than the trainer and the layer and everyone. I had a pair of big earphones around my neck. And when the gun was loaded, I attacked the layer on the shoulder. Which, after a few sessions, he said, Jim, you'll break my shoulder.